Hello, welcome back to the Subscribe blog. Today, I have Mohamed Ahmed from Egypt.
Hi.
We have a very international team, and so we have all kinds of countries. You are our support guy, but not only that.
Yep.
You're doing a lot of things, but you're on the hook for. Making us all comply with all the rules around lifestyle support.
Yep, I'm the guy who's delivering the good news for everyone, actually. You're in servicing who?
Yes. So, I think I talked about this with Cesar as well, and also with MK. Everybody on this team is on the hook to do servicing. And servicing means that, specifically for the PM, that's kind of a really nerve-wracking job because we're...
Correct.
24 hours.
Yeah, every week we have at least one PM who's on call, and that PM is, the focal point or the starting point of any escalations that happen. So you are the first one as a PM. You are the first one who got woken up in the middle of the night. Hey, the service is having an issue. You have to figure it out yourself, and then you call the appropriate person from there.
Yeah. So it's 8 data centers plus some extra facilities that we don't talk about.
Correct.
We have some special arrangements. We're running some private deployments for some bigger workloads in Microsoft.
Correct.
And they're kind of we're treated mostly as extra facilities. And then, of course, everything that happens with the server, per se, also comes...
There's a symmetry, pretty much a great symmetry between the server and the service, yeah. Except, of course, the way you run the server is depending on the customer.
That's so, right.
But we're providing the same mechanism and same tools for you to measure how the server health is doing in production.
So when you or I or Abhishek or Rupert or the other guys are, so we're, how many are, we're like
9 PMs.
So every 9 weeks, one of us is on the hook for a week.
Yeah.
And if there's vacation, then we're either trading slots or we're trying to avoid the slot.
Yeah.
What happens, what needs to happen before I get woken up?
Well, actually, let me take it a bit back. Mm-hmm. So Service Bus actually is, we are measuring the health of the service from 4 to 5 aspects. One of them is the canonical scenarios, the major scenarios that we're promising our customers to provide through the cloud service. And we do this through what's so-called runners. They're continuously, every few seconds, they're testing the service. Is the scenario working fine or not?
So I think of the runners as test transactions, effectively, that run against the system.
Yeah, in production.
Apps. They're like apps that run against the
correct.
System.
Correct. They're imitating a customer call
mm-hmm.
to our service. And then those runners are, they're just probing the system, making sure that the system is working fine given a moderate workload or an appropriate workload that we are configuring them at. And then there is another aspect, which is monitoring the infrastructure. If any of our VMs is having a problem, having a trouble, either due to legitimate or illegitimate kind of a scenario, we monitor this as well. There's also another aspect, which is an app level kind of monitoring. We monitor also all the exceptions and all the errors that are coming out of the app.
Mm-hmm.
And just also to make sure that the system, the overall system is performing well. And that happens all the time. That's expected to have some errors or some sort of exceptions being reported.
I mean, it's a distributed system.
It's a distributed system, so you're expecting this all the time.
Yes.
And then there is the customer experience aspect, and that aspect actually mainly is focusing on what's the actual customer experience on our system. Even though you're having a detailed kind of monitoring through the runners and infrastructure, but this is not necessarily reflecting what the customer is experiencing at the end. And then, of course, as a service bus, maybe you mentioned this or you got this actually mentioned in some other interviews, we're depending on some other services internally inside Microsoft. And we're monitoring this as well, just to make sure that all our dependencies are meeting their SLA, for us to meet our SLA for our customers.
Yes, because we own, I have a very recent talk where I'm saying nobody owns your service availability except yourself.
Correct. So we're taking the full responsibility of that.
Yes. So if, for instance, let's name one of the services that we depend on, the SQL database had an issue,
yep.
It, well, it would be easy to blame that service, but ultimately it's our responsibility to first of all know that that's happening, and then to also defend against that as good as we can. So we're doing a lot of work to kind of bridge
over those kinds of things. And actually it's proven that actually improves the TTD, which is the time to detect the problem. So if you're monitoring a SQL database and that database is having a problem, it's way faster than waiting for this problem to bubble up at the customer experience or at the customer level.
So what's our time to detect the problem? That's a metric.
Yes, that's one of the metrics that we're following to measure our efficiency and our success of actually handling the lifecycle issues or incidents.
So how are we doing kind of in the progression of things? What's our time to detect the problem with a database?
We are, for a database, less than actually a couple of minutes. If a database is having a problem, a slow transaction execution or something like that, in less than 2 minutes actually we can detect this. And if I'm talking about detecting means in less than 2 minutes the escalation will reach out the escalation engineer.
Oh wow!
So in less than 2 minutes, we should be able to.
I didn't even know that.
Trust me for this. And that's why the PM guys are actually their servicing loop sometimes becomes really stressful because if SQL is having few hiccups, we detect this even sometimes before the SQL guys themselves because we are pretty more sensitive than they are.
Yes.
For the database because that's the core dependency for us.
Well, we look inside of it. I mean, that's the same thing. It's an interesting problem, especially when you run a multi-tenant service.
Yep.
Is you can monitor your thing from the outside really well, so they can monitor the databases and the uptime and what the containers are right. And the same thing for us.
Yep.
We have these. We can tell whether all the queues are there, but then really the individual experience on that resource itself, like can you send to that one queue and can you receive from one queue? It's something that more or less the customer sees earlier or has seen earlier.
Yes, that's the bottom line for everyone, right?
Exactly.
In the service. I mean, rather than just saying, or depending on only some generic monitors, you have to really depend on the actual customer experience, the actual API call, the actual use of the resource.
Because what's hard is, for instance, for you think about the database, right? Mm-hmm. From me running infrastructure, I can't just run some test transactions against your particular database because, well, that's your database.
Yeah.
So, and I can't just, you know, for test, enqueue or dequeue some messages from your queue because, well, that's your queue.
Correct.
So what we need to do is we kind of need to sit in the middle and kind of observe that.
Correct. And this is what we're doing for the customer experience. We're intercepting every API call. Of course, we don't see what's happening inside this API, but we see what the API is happening. What's the code that's being returned back from the service? Whether it's a success, an error, timeout, whatever. And based on this, we report this at the end and we say whether we're having a lifecycle issue or not. And or whether we are actually achieving our SLA or not with the customers.
Yes. So for servicing purposes, or for any reliability purposes, we're observing the systems as good as we can. However, we're also hard on privacy.
Of course.
Which means we're not going to go in and look at collect.
Impossible. Yeah. It's technically almost impossible for us. We don't have any access to the customer private data. All what we have access to is whether there is a certain customer doing a transaction with our system right now or not, but we don't know what's inside this transaction.
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty much like, think of it in Windows. You know, Windows might be collecting your CPU activity, your memory activity, mm-hmm. but Windows is not actually reading what's inside the...
Yes, unless we made it so and we don't make it so.
Yeah,
so
yeah, of course.
That's the point.
So the back to the servicing loop thing, mm-hmm. so the PM actually, if any one of those monitors triggered or met a certain threshold that we set actually, we've been working on for a long time, the PM get calls.
Mm-hmm.
Before the PM, actually, we have a first line of defense, which is we call it WAS, Windows Azure Lifecycle Support. And these guys, usually, whenever they see an issue, they try to mitigate this issue themselves.
We're trying to give them a catalog of
a PSG, a troubleshooting guide. They follow that troubleshooting guide, and if at the end the problem is really requiring the product group intervention, then the PM get called at this time.
So our goal is. Our goal here is to make these troubleshooting guides as good as we can,
yes.
so that they don't wake us
because
up.
That's really important. Because actually, if a PM actually got called in the middle of the night,
yes,
the next day I get him in my office, or he comes pay me a visit.
How can I make sure
that this is not happening again? Which is good and bad. I mean, the good thing about it that if we actually as a product group get the pain or feed the pain of our customers, this makes us much better and much more efficient in handling those.
Problems. It is a mix between a central group that runs the systems and the DevOps approach, because we kind of get through the process we get the pain, we get to feel the pain from DevOps.
Right.
Like, you write the thing and you own the thing. But once we have seen a particular issue once, mm-hmm. we have a kind of buffer system, because we have a 24-hour distributed around the world team
Correct.
That deals with those things, that if we write out a procedure and we say, if you see this phenomenon in the system,
mm-hmm.
do these steps, and if that doesn't help,
call us.
Then call us.
Correct. This is what's exactly happening. And also the next step after this is, and that's also again part of the overall shift into the cloud world. Before the cloud, if you're a dev or in a product group in general, you develop the feature, you ship the feature, and then there is a separate team actually that supports this feature.
Yes.
And you don't necessarily get close to the customer. And I like some of the analogies that one of our managers here was saying. Well, if you're in the cloud world, you're a blue collar. You're not a white collar anymore, because you're really, really close to the production.
That's
pretty
true.
Much like the blue collars in a real production facility.
Yeah.
So that's the case here. You're really, really close to the customer. You're really close to the service, and you have to feel the pain of the customer in order for you to ship the feature. And that's why, I mean, this takes me actually to the next line of defense in our product group, which is the dev and test. If the PM again tries to mitigate this, and if the PM fails to mitigate this, this means that there is a real bug in the product, and we need to fix this immediately and react immediately. And in that case, actually, the PM would have to have a company in the middle of the night, which is a dev or a test, who's responsible for that feature.
So, yeah, so that's where the telephone list in the... You do something that's very useful, and that is... you have this calendar invite for the week,
correct?
With everybody on it and all their phone numbers on it.
Listed. Yep.
So there's when I'm on the call, there's one place I can go to. It's a calendar. Just open that invite, and I have everything that I need, kind of sticky in my Outlook,
correct.
In one place.
Yeah, it's really important to make sure that actually the minute counts here. It's and at the end, actually, once we're done with the, maybe we'll talk about it in detail, but we are actually counting how many minutes it took us to detect, how many minutes it took us to actually identify the problem, mitigate the problem, fix the bug, ship the bug, fix into production.
So what's our shortest turnaround time that we can do?
For detecting?
Let's say someone runs into an issue that is, I mean, I know that there's a broad variety of issues where you sometimes need to have a day to kind of...
Observe
what's actually happening. But let's say a customer tickles the system in a way that it hits an obvious bug, and we know immediately what's kind of the turnaround time.
I remember that happened actually at a certain point. End of last year, we were able to ship a complete fix from the first time the bug actually hit in less than 8 hours in all our production schedules.
So that's across all 8 data centers?
All 8 data centers, everything, less than 8 hours. We fixed the bug. We actually tested it in our end environments or internal environments, and we shipped into production already in 8 hours.
That's for an enterprise,
for
great messaging system. That
right.
Is,
I mean, think of it. Even in the fastest or the most agile company in the server world,
we're
talking
about
weeks.
Yes,
it's impossible.
Right.
Almost impossible.
So we have multiple. Let's talk about speed. We have multiple severities that kind of things can come in at.
Yeah.
So there's the most horrible thing is obviously the 7.0.
An earthquake.
And that is, 7.0 is when
the whole data center is actually down, almost. There's a natural disaster, almost
yes.
a natural disaster.
Yeah.
And then we have 7.1.
Either the data center or the power plant, more or less right next to it,
it could be,
needs to be taken out.
Set zero means that you're completely down you're blank.
Yes. And then for that we have, basically once we declare bankruptcy on a data center more or less,
Yes, that's the latest DR thing that we have. Right now what you can do, actually what we just recently introduced is, in every single scale unit we have deployed out there in production, there is, you know, a passive one. If there's anything happening like the SIP zero thing, the other one will pick immediately. Immediately, I mean, in less than 5 seconds. That other scale unit would just come up and everything would just work normally from the last point you left at. So that's one thing.
Are these kind of warm standby backup?
Yes.
Scale units?
All the time. There are every few seconds we're syncing up those scale units together.
And so all the messages flow there too?
Yes. So you're not going to lose anything.
So if we lose a Windows Azure compute cluster that we run on, mm-hmm. which has happened.
Okay.
Typically, the most interesting thing that I see in all these, I mean, when I'm on the servicing loop is the worst things happen because of things that are usually outside of the thing that's failed. So I think we had complete Windows Azure compute clusters fail because of someone misconfiguring a networking switch. So the compute cluster is not at fault. It's actually running fine. You just can't get to it.
Yeah, that happens. But this kind of issue is actually, it's interesting. I mean, the life cycle in general, or being in the servicing loop, it's like being in the newsroom, right? There are breaking news all the time.
Yes.
Or sometimes you don't get any interesting news, right? So this happens. And all the time you're learning something new because this kind of systems are so complex. They're distributed systems, and there are so many variables that can change in the middle. And that can drive the system down or just happen, and you may see some alerts, but actually nothing is actually affecting the customers at the end.
So the cluster down piece, that's a SEV 1.
Yes.
So SEV 0 is facilities.
SEV 0 is the whole facility. This means that there's something happening with the hardware or your infrastructure.
Yes.
SEV 1, this means that your whole service is down, but not necessarily the hosting infrastructure is having a problem. And then you have SEV 2, this means that one or more features are either down for all your customers or a subset of your customers. And then SEV 3, SEV 4, there are some features that are either flaky or having issues with some of the customers or all of your customers.
Or a customer comes and says, so
and that's different from the customer escalations. Maybe we can talk about that.
Yeah,
because we have LSI, lifecycle mm-hmm. issues, and we have CRIs, okay. Customer-created incidents.
So customer-created incidents, if I call support.
Yes.
So I think that the way this, from support, I mean, if you mm-hmm. Are calling us or reporting something, that gets to us, and it actually gets to us fairly quickly.
Yes. Depending on the severity.
Depending on, or whether our first line support can go and answer that directly.
Correct.
Or you have... Some people have crazy ideas and they manage to talk you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So those things come to us fairly quickly.
Yep.
And now also those requests are counted. So if you see something, it's a good idea, and you see something critical, it's a good idea to basically just say, you know, use the web form to send an email or call.
Yep.
Because effectively, if multiple customers are seeing the same issue,
That's escalated to a lifecycle issue.
Exactly.
Even if it's not reported by any of our monitoring tools.
Exactly. Because there can be, as we learn, there can be gaps in our monitoring coverage.
Right.
Where we've now been around for so long as a service that
2 years plus, yeah.
Yes, that there are not so many gaps anymore, but you never know.
It happens. I mean, sometimes all our monitors, by the way, are moving around. They're not necessary within the same data center, but sometimes in some situations they're all located in one place, and the bigger network on the internet can get partitioned. And some of your customers all your monitors may report that you're available,
mm-hmm.
but your customers are not able to get into the data center or get into that specific cluster.
Yeah, because there's a network split.
Anything can happen.
Yes.
Yeah, correct. So,
I mean, we have these other funny things are Microsoft runs this. Most of the traffic that we get kind of comes from ultimately Microsoft Fiber. So if you try this in a major metropolitan area in the US or even in Europe, and you won't be able to trace route kind of past our firewall, but kind of you can get close. What you'll find is that if you do a trace route to your own service bus namespace address or even your cloudapp.net site, and you observe the names, you will get very early onto Microsoft Fiber.
Correct.
And so you're sitting on that Microsoft network. So the fun part of that is that whenever we actually see network operations issues also showing up, because we own all those things.
Yeah.
So if someone plows through one of the cables, which also has happened, all that traffic gets routed around.
And even a simple upgrade of one of the infrastructure items or the components that we depend on. I mean, sometimes we move from the F5, the hardware load balancer, the software load balancer, and vice versa, due to some network loads and some resource allocation considerations. That may just drive some of our servers to be down or to be affected by this. And
yes,
maybe our runners will not be able to capture this, or our other monitors will not be able to capture this. And sometimes, generally speaking, in the servicing loop, no news, good news. But sometimes, no news at all. There's something really bad happening, or there's something fishy about it. Because, as we just mentioned at the beginning, it's a distributed system. There must be something happening at
yes.
a certain point. If you don't see anything,
you might be.
I get worried. Yeah.
So actually, failure is something that we expect for our own sanity, more or less.
Yes. I agree.
So then Ceph3 is someone is having an issue. For LSIs.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily blocking them.
It's not necessarily blocking them, or it's something that is enormously inconvenient, but their business is not affected.
Yes, for example.
It's more
we still attack this, but during the business hours.
So that's the interesting part. So Ceph 0, 1, and 2, kind of everybody hands on deck.
Yes.
Or at least the servicing loop folks.
They would be walking
hands
up.
On deck, walking
yep.
up. You got to be working this right now.
Correct.
That happens, fortunately, not all that often.
Yes. Not anymore. Sorry about that. Maybe we can repeat.
Well, no, that's actually, we don't have to repeat that, it's okay. Ringing the phone is not a sin.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So, it's an evil phone. Yes. So if you call in, then you're now in the boat with either you're in the boat with other people.
Correct.
Which means you have reported something that is of high urgency, so then you will cause people to be woken up.
Yes.
Or you're observing something that we have observed. It's likely that if it's a Ceph2 or worse,
mm-hmm.
that we're already working on that. And then
yes.
you get the answer from the support guys, yep, that's being worked on.
Yes, correct.
If you're reporting this directly, it will immediately be looked at from this from the first level team.
Yes.
Who will then go and take some they have some tools in hand.
Yes. First of all, they have of course access to all the monitors that we have. So
mm-hmm.
the runners, the dashboards that would monitor the customer experience, etc. And then we actually equip them with some tools to drill down into the details of those alerts or alarms that are being emitted by those runners. And we tell them what does each one of these mean and what are the exact steps that they need to follow. And we are making sure that those steps are concrete enough and accurate enough to make sure that even a person who just on his first day in the servicing loop or on call from their side would be able to mitigate that issue, hopefully.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they try to triage real alarms from false alarms, because sometimes customers call and say doesn't work when the actual fashion
and,
doesn't
and,
work.
And double reporting happens also, right? Sometimes if you are having a problem deep down into one of your dependencies in one of the databases, the database alarm would be triggered, the runner would be triggered, a customer experience dashboard will be triggered. So we're still working on this, but in that case, of course, over-reporting is better than under-reporting. But yeah, sometimes this happens. And these first-line defense guys, the WASs, as we call them, they also handle that.
So if you come to us and say you want to have a you see some sporadic issues and you have like a fault exception thrown back and you have a tracking ID.
Yeah.
By the way, when you use Service Bus or any of the other services, when you get the exceptions from us, you typically get these tracking IDs. So if you look at the test in the text of the exception,
you get
the tracking ID. That tracking ID is matched in the logs on
yes.
their backend service.
Yeah.
So if you give that to us, we can actually go and search for that, and we can exactly see what happened on the other side.
Correct. Yeah.
As that fault exception happened.
Yeah, we generate each month almost half a petabyte of logs. Half a petabyte.
Petabyte?
Yeah. We generate a lot of data because we, and that's really necessary. We, from this data, we understand a lot about the reliability of the site. That's the zero for us, if you want to call it this way. And then we also, and this, we're still digging into this, we understand how our customers are utilizing the service. What's the typical scenario? How can we serve best the customer in that? How can we make sure that the customer is having a seamless experience in this? If there's a certain combination that the customer is all the time doing and how they're using the APIs, we also look into that so that we enhance the interaction experience later on. It's a gigantic data that we get each month. We're still actually in our early stages in that, but we're actually doing pretty good progress in this area. So going back to the tracking ID, yes, in that half petabyte we can get whatever the exception that you got. We have a copy of that in our service, in our logs, and we can drill down and get that exception.
So if you get that exception occasionally, or if you get exceptions occasionally, I mean, there's a certain threshold under which you should expect. Like, we have a reliability...
99.9. This
yeah.
is our...
Which means that out of every 1,000 operations you do on the service, one can fail.
Yep.
Basically.
Actually, 10 can fail.
Yes. Well, yes.
Yeah.
So which means that the application has to absorb some of that because
yeah.
there's just stuff moving around in the system where nodes come up, nodes go down. We can't make every operation happen. But if you get a short burst of exceptions, like you try to do something and it fails 10 times in a row,
mm-hmm.
that's something that we can look it up.
Yeah.
But typically, that's something that is okay if it eventually then works. If you actually run into a persistent issue that lasts for a while, then that's certainly something that we'll look at. And then the support policy for these CEF3 things, where it's basically working, but it's not working as it should.
Well, actually, it's still within business hours, but. And that's
and business hours means
Bretman's business hours.
Bretman's specific time.
If this has to be handled by the product group.
Yes.
So if your request actually can be handled by the support group that you have in your country or area, then the business hours of course is by them. And every time you create a ticket, actually the route goes this way. There's a CSS customer support team, and this is the first line of defense. They try to answer your question. If not, this gets escalated to Windows Azure support team or unit, and if not, then they get escalated to us.
I mean, ideally, the way we're trying to do this, my understanding, is if we have one particular issue and there is a pattern to it, like this is something that can occur again
mm-hmm.
because of the way things are built, we try to kind of bubble out that knowledge to the edge, if you will, to our folks in the respective countries or. Were kind of in the first line support,
yeah.
So that they can answer that question directly for you, and we don't have to
yeah.
have to do that. Not only because we don't want to be woken up, but also because that's kind of the closest support for you.
Correct. And at the end, actually, at the end of each week, each month, we go through these and see if there are anything interesting for us also to learn about. So if a customer is having an issue, let's say, and the CSS or the Wazoo team decided to close that and answer the customer, we still actually sometimes dig into the customer logs, but not their logs, the system logs, and see if there's something really abnormal or something that we need to learn from. And this is something we do regularly.
So another interesting aspect that I find, and that's something that you are managing certainly much more than I do, also because I'm usually not around from a time zone perspective for these reviews, is how really these, you have to you know, stand by your mistakes, and you have to basically be, you're held accountable for those things. So if you have these Ceph 2, Ceph 1, Ceph 0 things, that's not staying within the family, that's actually going up the chain of command.
Yeah, correct. So at the end of each week, so during your week you have to handle all of that, and then at the end of the week we have an LSI review meeting, and then that meeting we review all the incidents. We start with the most severe one and get down to the Ceph 3 and Ceph 4 ones. So guess if there's a Ceph 2, we have to identify exactly what happened, and we have to measure accurately the time to detect, time to mitigate, and then what are the short-term fixes, the long-term fixes, how can we make sure that this is not happening again. And of course, it's very important for us, and that's number one for us, is to identify how many customers got affected and how can we make sure that these customers are either not affected until we solve it, what's the turnaround, or if we're shipping a hot fix, what is the time for that?
So the it's
for, and then it goes up. I mean, they we do it at different levels. We start it internally at the team. We take it at the Azure level, and then it goes up even to the level of the president of STD.
So the these issues that get reported to the president of STD, Satya Nadella, they're the most famous ones because they get their own blog post.
Yeah.
But it's, the reporting is as thorough for everything that's kind of these at these levels of incidents. So I mean, when you see the blog posts, they're actually very thoroughly researched, and there's a clear explanation of why that happened.
Correct.
But we not only do that for the blog post. I mean, obviously, if the scale of an outage is so big that it's worth, you know, putting up a blog post for us so that everybody can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we do it that way. But even if, you know, if 3-4 customers are affected, they're also getting a what we call RCA.
Correct. I mean, we as I just mentioned, actually, we go through how many minutes it took us to move from one stage to the other, from detection to mitigation, short term, long term, etc. And the most important thing is, it happens that you may have failures or alerts or lifecycle issues. But the key here is how to make sure that this is not going to happen again. This is the bottom line for all of us. We have very little tolerance to that, to have mistakes being repeated inside our life site. But we have all the word tolerance to learn from that and make sure that we are getting the most out of this.
The most recent, one of the most obvious ones that we were a little affected by that, but not too much.
Yes,
the certificate issue with storage. We see significant process improvements because of that now, where now we have actually, you know, email lists around with warning categories, and so someone actually sat down and said, okay, we have to get a new process around this.
Correct.
And it's very visible to effectively everybody who is in these servicing functions.
Correct.
When that happens, what the schedule is, etc., etc. And there's also, you know, teams then, you know, taking a look at whether they want to go in even further to avoid those things.
Correct.
So it's a continuous learning process.
Correct. And actually, one of the, I think from that specific incident that we had, one of the major takeaways is that do not depend on other teams monitoring. You have to also monitor all your dependencies and making sure that they're meeting their SLA. Or if they're about to fail, you have to make sure that we are partnering with a part of our partnership with that other team is to tell them that there's something wrong with the service that they're giving us back. We have to report this accurately and make sure mm-hmm. that they have enough data and enough details at their plate to mitigate that issue. So
that goes back to the you know, nobody owns your availability but yourself.
Correct.
Principle, which is, even though we're all in the same boat, I mean, we're all building services that are part of the platform. We cannot trust anybody but ourselves, and that's true for also for the teams that take dependencies in Service Bus, because ultimately, we can't blame it on anybody. if we're down, and we should not, because we are responsible for, you know, if you trust only a single services component out of the platform, then that services component needs to be there, and it's our responsibility to make it available.
Because you never know how the customer is critically depending on your service.
Yes.
So we should be the most conservative with that. You are assuming that any downtime of the service is a life-threatening event.
Yes.
So we have to deal with it this way. That's why every minute, every second counts, and we have to make sure that we're really quickly mitigating that issue. And it has its own challenges, that's fine, and we're ready to take this kind of challenge and learn from it. And speaking of the dependencies, we have to be also innovative about that. Just a quick thing, and maybe also to give a notion for whoever is watching this video right now of how challenging sometimes it becomes. We depend on SQL Azure, right? And we are creating hundreds and sometimes thousands of databases in each one of our scale units to serve our customers. It was really, really difficult for us to pinpoint what are the problems with those databases and even visualize this. So we were using different ways to visualize problems with the database. One of them is the heat map. So in one single big image, you can pinpoint that there in those 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 databases, you can pinpoint a single database if it has a problem. You can go back, you can even measure at the level of a few minutes back, 20 minutes in the last 20 minutes, what was happening with all my 6,000 or 5,000 databases. So I think it's cool, it's interesting, has a lot of learning.
There's a lot of stuff that's going on under the covers that people don't see, so I think that's it's a great thing great opportunity for people who are watching this and are interested enough to follow, to see all the things that are happening kind of under the waterline. And there's a lot of work that goes in there, because people, sometimes people ask, well, why haven't you built this feature and this feature and this feature yet? Because running the features that we have reliably, and so that you can actually build business functions on top of that, is not easy. And certainly doing that at scale, and also with all the disaster recovery functionality that we have in the back, that we don't talk too much about, but that we really have, a warm backup for each scale unit, so your stuff inside of the same data center is protected. And then even if we lose the facility, we can also go and fail over to the next facility.
Correct.
It's all stuff that's kind of built into the system that's deployed, that's running. But that you don't get to see if you are just looking at the API and just looking at the features.
The EDR itself, it bring a lot of challenges. One of the problems that we were thinking of, for example, if the data center, the primary data center or scale unit is down, also, it's not about only how we make sure that we are providing the APIs. The problem that we were thinking of, we're still working on, how we make sure that all our monitors actually will be migrated with that also working copy.
Yes, you need to move
everything.
Wholesale,
yes.
With everything that points to it.
Correct, it's not about just redirecting the customer or changing the DNS to another place. There are a whole set of stuff happening in the background. You make sure that even though we had a disaster in the first one, the second one has to be working exactly the same as the first one,
and we're also trying that out. It's not that this is all, we are actually doing failovers. We're doing that with the integration environments, with the production environments, but we're declaring fake bankruptcy. We're doing catastrophic. We're doing kind of what you would do in fake alarms, in
fire drills. And
fire drills.
Yeah.
That's
correct.
What I meant. It just escaped the English word for that. Well, thank you very much. It was a fairly long but very insightful look behind the scenes of the servicing piece and how to keep the systems running.
Yep.
And I hope that was also interesting for you.
Yep. Thank you, guys.